This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Dig on America, the podcast. The Dig, the America, the... I got to rip on Dutch because he wants the in front of everything. Welcome, humans. Dig on America is a social political podcast where every week we give you the dig on U.S. history, politics, policy, and pop culture, and we discuss how they affect social political issues. DOA is independent...
Get it together, Crouch.
DOA is independent media funded by... listeners, supported by listeners, but in all likelihood, a deep state propaganda arm funded by George Soros, the Clinton Foundation, Jay-Z, Colin Kaepernick, and...
Skeletor.
You guys are getting paid?
we're also funded by the Cylon Empire, if I didn't know.
The board.
I thought something felt weird.
Emperor Palpatine, throw him in there.
Not from a Jedi.
What was the villain in the Smurfs? What was his name? Gargamel?
Him
too. He plays us in Smurfs.
That you can pull Gargamel just out of the air like
he pays us in chilled Smurf blood.
Which ironically is purple.
Right.
What? Really? Wait, why do I want to know? Stop. I don't care about that. Why did I ask?
So there's a picture of my oldest when he was like 1.5 that somehow daycare caught of him just doing this like, Hulk smash, mm-hmm. with the perfect face and everything. And if I can pull it up here, I will. And it's with the edible, slime or whatever, and it's purple and blue. And so I actually called him Gargamel in that picture.
And that voice you're hearing is young Swede _ Irish. Irish Swede, as he is colloquially known. Hello. How are you, sir?
I'm fabulous. And here's Gargamel. Here is Gargamel.
There you go.
Oh, yes.
Look at that.
Oh, yes.
Triumphant.
Bring me another Smurf.
That is actually, we have it framed on a canvas. And it's titled Bring Me Another Smurf.
So. Always fun to have cool kids.
Perfectly titled.
And also joining us today is Dave from Washington. Dave, how you doing?
I am doing really well. I'm pleased to be here, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. Big House, how you doing, big homie? Looking kind of Method Man over there. I see your arms out.
Oh, man, I just doing a little something on the side, That's, I got to look like I can kick ass. I got sons and I got daughters. So you got to look like you can whoop the son's ass and whoop the boyfriend's ass. So you got to, keep it together. Plus, I am a personal trainer, so I kind of look the part,
You've met my fitness consigliere. I have to just voice all of his stupid soundboard things. Jenamiyu, you'll be very happy. There will be 0% soundboard in this episode. Because Dutch, who is not with us, I think is on the run for something. I don't know. He just said he had to grab his bug out bag and go. He didn't really explain why he's not here. But I'm sure he'll guess.
It's the Bakersfield Trumpers that are after him.
Did they finally find video of him in the Capitol riot?
I think that's what it was, is that he forgot to turn off he forgot to put his phone in airplane mode when he was recording.
Right.
So he pinged a tower.
It's those little details, man, that'll get you every time.
Little details, man.
And the tower is actually inside the Capitol building.
Yeah.
So that's how they actually got everybody, is there's a 500-foot radius tower inside the Capitol building that's a relay tower. And so everybody that hit that
stupid asses.
Dumb ass.
Hey, a fun fact. Uh-huh. I'm not going to name the town, but there's a guy who ran for office in the town close to my town who
in
was
town?
Outed. No.
Okay, other way?
The other way.
Okay.
And it's one of those affluent towns, very affluent. Mm. And he was outed during the campaign for being at the riot, correct? Mm. He doubled down. He doubled down. Yeah, I was there. It's probably, somebody has to do something for America, blah, 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 right? Guess right. what? This mug won in a landslide. And it's not like some little peon position that he was running for either.
Color me surprised.
Along with a slate of similarly minded people won in a landslide in this town. So suffice it to say, I'm very careful when I drive my son to school because he goes to school in that town.
Hmm.
So you want me to save some boxes from work? We'll get you up out of here. That's what it sounds like to me. It's time to giddy up and go. Let them have it.
No, no, I'm fine in my town.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's next door.
Even the Republicans in my town looked at those Republicans and were like, those fuckers are crazy. You know you're crazy.
There's when a the lot GOP of that going
candidates
on,
from your town look at those people and say, them motherfuckers crazy.
So, Sweet, you've been on before, but Dave, do you want to introduce yourself to the audience and let people know what you're about?
Sure. Yeah, Dutch was the one that invited me on, you know, probably a moment of insanity. I'm not sure. But I'm from Washington. And just to be clear, that's Washington, the state, you know, like on the, you know, severe west side, not D.C., the capital. I am an educator by profession. I was a high school teacher for 24 years and a high school principal for 11. I am an avid motorcyclist. I also was an elected member of the House of Representatives here in Washington. I represented as a Democrat a very conservative district, and as far as I know, that was back in the 90s, and they haven't elected a Democrat since. So I must have either really done a crappy job or, you know, something was going on. And I also just, you know, since some of the things in the news lately, back in the 90s, I was also a reserve police officer for a small town here in Washington State. And so, you know, I have kind of a perspective, you know, on those things from way back in the day. But I'm just happy to be here with you guys. It's great.
Oh, you flatter us, and that will get you everywhere. Everywhere. Mr. Mountain Dew Sweet. Give people a little rundown on you for people who may not have seen you last week.
Hi there. I am the Irish Swede. My day job is as an economist and a financial fraud due diligence officer. So anything about the financial markets, monetary and fiscal policy, some tax issues, not a lot, I can comment on and like to comment on. So, and then also 1990s football, because that's all this state's about.
First topic for tonight, Chauvin verdict. Guilty on all charges. I didn't actually pull up the charges. Does anyone have them handy? I can grab it.
Oh, I got them right here.
Second degree murder.
Second degree manslaughter. Boom. Guilty. Bitch.
Yeah.
Now let's see if he's actually going to be sentenced properly. And more importantly, will this case be the catalyst for real systemic changes in the law enforcement system? I'm sorry, did I steal your thunder on that?
Perfect. Okay. I pass the ball around here. You know what I'm saying? I'm the J kid up here. You know.
It has been the catalyst for a bunch of people thinking they're making right wing talking points, but it's actually left wing. There are a lot of people saying like, "Oh, a bunch of cops are going to quit over this." Good.
I posted a meme earlier today and it said, if you're thinking of quitting because of this verdict, you should.
Yeah.
I support their decision.
And if you think that you don't want to be a cop anymore, you're not one, and you think this is maybe a detriment to you doing your job if you are one, then please find a different career.
I am reminded of the immortal words of Ringo from Tombstone.
From the Beatles.
Well, bye.
Absolutely. There are two types of people that go into law enforcement, at least, and I've got to I'm going to, here's my disclaimer. I was a cop back in the early 90s. And so things are different now, but they aren't in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got people that enter law enforcement because they have a true desire to serve the community and to be a public servant. Right. And there's this other group of people that really the reason they go in is because, oh, I get to carry a badge and a gun and be a badass, yeah, and kick people around. Do we have time for me to share just a quick story?
Absolutely.
Please do.
I mean, you know, okay. So, you know, as a reserve, you know, we went in and we had these different levels. You know, I entered as a third class reserve. You know, you were given this fucking uniform that made you look like a forest ranger. as a second class reserve, you wore the same uniform as everybody else. If you made it far enough to be a first class reserve, you were a regular officer. You were able to work alone. And in fact, when the regular officers would call in, you would be the ones, you know, if there was no regular officer that wanted to take that shift, you were able to pick that up. And so that's where I was, you know, when the last time I was there. But still, as a reserve, there is a power differential from you as a reserve from those that are a regular officer. And I remember one night I was out, we were doing graveyard shift and we got a call. It was a fucking noise complaint at this one little part of town. And so, you know, I called up for it and I went down there and here are these two guys, the bars had just closed up and these guys were walking down the railroad tracks, singing at the top of their lungs, just having a goddamn great time. That's all it was. They were carrying the six pack of beer that they brought from the place, you know, and I just pulled up and I said, guys, you know, we're getting calls of people that are complaining because you're being too loud. And they were totally apologetic. Then this asshole regular officer who shall remain nameless comes up and pulls rank and starts pushing these guys around, emptying their beers. And we ended up with having to put both these guys on the ground in the back of a car. This was totally preventable.
Yeah.
I had that situation under control at right. that point. Right. And this other officer basically came in and turned it to shit. And clearly this was one of those officers that went in for the wrong reason. And so, yeah, you know, you have two totally different types of cops out there. And what really gave me hope out of this Chauvin thing was, for the first time, we saw on public TV cops standing up against other cops.
Yeah.
That is what it's going to take.
Yeah. Yeah. They talked about the thin blue line being broken, especially by the police chief who testified against Chauvin. And so it was an interesting take from that point because, you know, from a layperson, you always hear about cops protect cops. Mm-hmm. Which to me goes, when you say there's a few bad apples, that you have to finish the phrase. A few bad apples makes a whole batch bad. Mm-hmm. And so if you have this inbreeding of cops protecting each other, then your cops are not outing the bad apples. Therefore, right. the whole batch is bad.
Absolutely. Right. You are judged by your lowest denominator in that. The worst of the worst. That's what the whole bunch is judged on.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there should be a problem with I think I'm going to echo from you, so we pull back a little bit. There shouldn't be this giant line in the sand where people, we have to support them. They're doing this like, no, they're held to a higher standard for a reason. They should get the same punishment as us, if not worse, because they are in positions of power where there isn't really a mechanism for them to be stopped mid-situation. Now, if things were like in an alternate reality where someone was laying on top of someone else and a cop showed up, the first thing the cop's going to do is get the guy off of him.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't make a difference. Chauvin is a person on top of another person who can't breathe. Those other cops should have got him off of him. It's just, it gets very simple. Like the more complicated it gets, the more simple it gets. A person can't breathe because another person is on top of them. Let's solve that, and then we can deal with
the
fake $20 bill. All this over $20? Really?
And guess what? And the cashier said, the dude probably didn't even know he was passing a fake bill, because most people don't.
He said most people can't recognize him.
Yeah.
I've been cashiering for years. I can tell, but I can hand you a whole fistful of bills and all of them are fake and they all look legit. And they're all fake for different reasons. Or I can tell that, right. Oh, this one used to be a five and it's had a bleach bath. That one is, but you know what I'm saying? Like you can, if you deal with money a lot, you can tell the difference. But the layperson, and they already affirmed that he was high when he was in the store. You know, you think he's going to know what he's doing? He doesn't know what he's doing. You can't tell the difference. You can't tell if there's red and blue fibers inside and all the watermarks. Like, no one tests their own money.
No,
for sure.
I can't tell you the last time I looked at a bill and was like, oh, no. You give me a 20? I'm taking a 20. Thank you.
No.
Casino and they just de-use the marker on it.
Yeah, those don't work, though.
No, yeah, and I'll give, you know, to me there are a few truths that I see come out of this. I mean, obviously, of course, police officers are human, you know, and they're going to make mistakes. Yes. But when you put that uniform on, and I don't care whether, you know, what race you are, as soon as you put that uniform on, you have a higher level in power than the average person out there.
Yeah.
The third truth is that if you have that kind of power, you have to be held to a higher level of accountability, period. And so we need to begin to retrain, reprogram cops so that, you know, the first line of defense isn't the most lethal. De-escalation. My God, this is 2021. There's got to be less lethal forms of restraint out there. There just have to be.
And totally understand.
And especially with in other countries and in other cultures, their cops haven't had guns for decades. But somehow they find ways to de-escalate things, or if they need to physically restrain somebody, they have ways of doing it that don't involve just shooting from 30 feet away. Like, that can't be the only way to solve a problem, is to shoot from 30 feet away.
Or to kneel on someone's neck for almost 10 minutes.
While they're handcuffed.
Four of which the dude was totally unresponsive and probably dead. And you're just sitting there like you're eating a bag of Skittles.
Yeah.
That was relaxing. Yeah.
In popular culture, we typically see like internal affairs and the union being adversarial and everything, and that creating a lot of tension within the police departments and stuff. How much of that is true? And then how much of the union and the way the unions protect the officers through investigations is real from what we see from pop culture, and then what's real?
Dave.
That's crossing the line, or that's causing problems.
Yeah. So, Dave,
that's a question for Dave.
Oh, yeah.
How much of that is real?
You know, I've been out of it for a while, but I will tell you that, you know, from my experience with unions, the purpose of unions has changed somewhat over history. To where, you know, when they started, it was to really protect workers and to avoid them from being abused. Right. So, and as a, you know, as an administrator, as a high school administrator, I saw some of that power of unions being used to cover for people whose job performance was so, you know, really bad.
Lacking.
And subpar and lacking. And I have to believe that that has to be the same case within the police departments, that, you know, the unions, there's a big difference between protecting a worker's rights, you know, and to avoid them from being abused by the people that hire them, and covering up a bad employee that should not have that job. Because when you do that, you're guaranteeing that person is going to do this again and again and again. And so, yeah.
Yeah, so Chauvin had like, what, 16 or 17 complaints against him before this?
Right. And
it's not like he's like at a plant and he just can't show up on time. Then the union steps in and is like, well, he should have this meet time. No, when you're a cop, it's different. You can't have someone get complaints with a gun on them and a bad attitude and a bad, Not displacement. He's not an engine. What am I thinking of?
Disposition.
Disposition. Right. There you go. He has, if you have a shitty disposition and a gun and a fucking ego problem, you probably shouldn't be protected by the union.
I don't mean to step on you, Dave, but what's crazy is this. On the day of the incident, what was he doing? He was training officers.
Right.
He was training new officers. So guess what? If that young lady didn't have a cell phone and hit record, if those people didn't stop and say, hey, what you're doing is wrong, he would have gotten away with this. Right. And exactly. those new officers that were being trained would have been like, I guess that's the way to do it. You know what I mean?
Just like
the other Minnesota officer who mistook her gun for a taser. I don't know how. She was training new officers.
Yeah, that still blows my mind.
How do you not see that happen?
They are totally. The feeling in the hand is totally different. The weight is different. The way they respond is different.
If she was citing it. She was citing it. How do you not see this big black thing in your hand?
After that, especially after that many years of experience. Yeah. Come on.
Standing there with the gun. I'm like, that's a gun. And she's like, taser, taser, taser. What are you seeing?
The amazing stat is she had already been an officer for 6 years when that person was born.
Isn't that amazing?
So that's just the experience that she had going into that situation.
Is she training officer? Was she a regular beat cop or was she like more administrative? Because the only thing I can think of is like
she was the president of their union.
Oh,
right.
Here we go. See.
There we go. Yeah.
Have charges been brought up for her?
Oh yeah, they got a little orange mugshot of her. Orange jumpsuit. I don't know what the charges are, but they definitely arrested her and charged her with something. I think it's negligence or something.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah. We'll see what happens with that. You know? I just hope that out of all of this tragedy, that real systemic changes are made. Because whether or not these officers get convicted and charged, or charged and convicted and sentenced properly, the bottom line is these things need to stop happening.
Right.
And that only occurs with real systemic changes. The police union needs to stop being so protective of people they know are bad. Training needs to change. There needs to be more implicit bias training. There needs to be better background checks and more extensive due diligence when screening prospects for police. The training system needs to be a little bit longer, maybe. You know,
there's
lots of things that need to happen here. I think that also there's a lot more focus on handgun, the service weapon training, than there is on taser training and other non-lethal methods.
De-escalation protocol.
I think it's like a, you know, ooh, yeah, we should de-escalate. But then they show video after video after all of these incidences where you're going to be in danger and where you're going to need to put somebody down.
Absolutely.
And they prime you through their I have a lot of fraternity brothers who are cops, and they prime you through all of these videos to come into every situation up here instead of kind of having, okay, I'm going to come here and assess the situation. It's almost pre-assessed because, you know, there's so many videos and things that say, and the cops are like, the training officers are like, any situation could turn into a lethal one in the snap of a finger. Look at this. You know, this is a simple traffic stop. And look, this officer ends up being shot or this, and the other. So you have to go into every situation.
Right.
You know, like up here. That's, I mean, God bless it.
Yeah, it is. You know, I agree. You know, there are a couple of things. First of all, you know, when you were talking earlier about the amount of times that Chauvin had complaints brought against him. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a way to track that, you know, and let's be realistic. You know, any officer who's doing their job in the course of a year is going to have one or two or three complaints. I mean, there's no way you can do that job without pissing mm-hmm. people off.
Right.
But when you start having multiple complaints brought against you, where there's smoke, there is fire. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a mechanism in place where, you know, where people need to step back and take a look at that seriously before mm-hmm. the next George Floyd happens.
Yeah.
For example, like my industry, I have my Series 7. You can get on brokercheck.org, look me up, see every complaint against me that's ever been filed. Luckily, I have none, but also see every place I've ever worked, every, you know, all these things. So mm-hmm. why don't we have that for people that can pull a gun on you in public?
Right.
Right. Right. And stop anyone from helping you. Like,
yeah.
And because if it was just
back
like,
up, back up, back up, back up.
Yeah. Because if it was just two dudes that were scrapping on the ground, I feel like, especially the dude who had like the MMA training, he definitely went in there and broke that whole thing up. But because that person is a police officer, that takes things to a completely different level. So now the public can't even stop the cops from doing anything for fear of retribution from the law system. And and speaking of the law system, qualified immunity, I vote we get rid of it.
We get rid of it. I agree.
It's got to go.
I think the union should probably go too. And then the union should just the way that the protection should work is with the people themselves, the people that the cops are working for.
You mean like
I think in that type of situation, having too much protection against being, say, let go or being held accountable. Position.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact is the lines of reasonable force are drawn, and it shouldn't take, you know, an act of God to be able to see, yes, you know, once a person has stopped struggling, the threat is minimized, the amount of force needs to back off. And if an officer can't recognize where that boundary is and act appropriately, that officer should not be an officer. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I forget what the exact legal jargon is. Let me look it up real quick for qualified immunity. But it's pretty much, if the cop breaks the law and they haven't been completely and utterly trained to the 100th degree in it, then they can kind of – they can feign ignorance of law.
Yeah, I think that also what they say is that there has to be a case exactly like what the officer did where that officer was punished for – this officer to be punished. Okay. If that case isn't the exact same and the circumstances weren't exactly the same, then qualified immunity applies.
So this is the legal definition. In the United States, qualified immunity is a legal principle that grants government officials performing discretionary functions immunity from civil suits unless the plaintiff shows that the official violated clearly established statutory or constitutional rights of which a reasonable person would have known.
Civil, but not criminal.
Civil. I was going to say that there's your key, their word there is that, you know, that's civil.
Mm-hmm. I don't,
I
don't understand how that could, how is this a thing? You know, how, why?
So, Mikey, do you really want to go there?
I can't.
Do you want to go back to slavery and figure out why qualified immunity is there?
I can't find a good reason for it in 2021.
They keep telling us to get over slavery, but they still have holdovers from slavery on the law books today, and they're using them to kind of get away with new age lynching. I mean, I don't know.
No, I agree. Hey, I'm a white guy. I agree with you, Big Hoss. I mean, that really is. All it is a legal wall that's put up to allow white people who abuse that authority to go, oops.
Oh, I broke him. Hey, what did Richard Pryor say? Hey, can you break a ninja? Oh, yeah. Right here in the book, it says you can break a ninja. It's okay.
I'm sorry, officer. I didn't know I couldn't do that.
And I think the police pension fund should be.
That would be amazing. Yes, if the settlements came out of the police pension fund, that would be amazing. Because you know how fast stuff would drop. Do you know how fast brutality?
You are so true. That all of a sudden you're playing with money.
Would you please get down on your knees and put your hands behind your back, sir? Please. He won't do it.
What you do is you say it may not necessarily come out of the pension fund, but your years of service will be reset to zero.
Yeah.
So if you have a 7-year vesting period, now you got to go back through the vesting period and your prior years don't count towards your retirement pension.
Yeah, but
I can't remember which of you was talking about it, but you brought up the training, and you know it's true. And I'll admit that when I was trained, and there is a certain reality and logic to this. That, you know, that they tell you there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop where there isn't. And you know, I always had a little sticker right on my dashboard that said WITS, WITS, and what it stood for was what if it turns to shit. And so you have that attitude. But the thing is that, you know, and Big Hoss mentioned this, is that, you know, when you go to a traffic stop, there's a difference between, you know, this may turn bad and I expect this to turn bad. There's a whole world of difference between those two approaches. And, you know, and the issue is that there are so many officers, most of them white, that, you know, when they approach a vehicle with a person of color, that level goes up to this other automatically. And the only way you're going to get past that.
That's just implicit bias. That's all it is.
It's an implicit bias. And the only way you're going to get past that is with implicit training.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, I've had some very bad experiences with law enforcement, not to the point where I've been brutalized or obviously not murdered, but I've been pulled off the street and taken into a lineup when I've nowhere near fit the description. I've had officers ask people I was with, "Are you here of your own free will?" Because the girl was Caucasian and da 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 and stuff like that. But I've also had situations where I get pulled over. And the officer comes up to the window, sees me, and you could tell he has a certain expectation on his face. Mm. And then based on my reaction and how I act towards him, this face dissolves. And there's actually surprise on his face like, oh, wow, this is nothing like I got out of the car expecting to happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I've had officers say thank you. You know, thank you for, you know, the way you carried yourself during this stop. And at nighttime, you know, one of an officer friend of mine said, hey, when you get pulled over at night, roll all your windows down, turn on your dome lights, and they'll know. First of all, they'll know a cop probably told you to do that. But second of all, you're announcing that you are not a threat and that, you know, that you are not someone who is going to put them in harm's way because you're illuminating yourself, illuminating the vehicle, and kind of putting them at ease. And that increases your chances of surviving this encounter, which is shitty to have to say and shitty to have to do.
That's the reality of the situation.
It is. Right. And I got to say, that just kills my heart, you know, hearing that because, I mean, you know, me, I was raised, I'm white privilege all the way. You know, I can't even begin to understand what it would be to walk a mile, you know, in your shoes. But what I've tried to do is listen and to get an idea. And it just frosts me that, you know, that people of color have to do that in this world, which our country, and whether the Republicans like it or not, is becoming more diverse by the day. Mm-hmm. And it's got to change.
And I'm actually really glad you said that, Dave, because a lot of people are like now like, oh, well, let me just listen and let me soak in some of these experiences so that I can better relate and remove some maybe implicit biases that I might have had, not known about it. But it's like, you know what? The more I hear the – I told my girl about me getting my cop talk. And I was like, that was 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Hoss got his more than 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And my mom had hers more than – you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. So this and is I had not a talk, new thing, and it, but it's the no, same talk.
My son turned 13 this past December. And I sat him down and I said, you may be biracial, you may be lighter skinned, but dude, this is the age where you go from being that cute little boy to being perceived as a threat. Yeah. And I said, you know, it's shitty that I have to talk to you like this, but these are the things you need to do. I said, a lot of your friends are white. A lot of the people in your friend circle are white. I said, you have to understand that if they are doing anything perceived as illegal, you have to totally exit that situation because they will go home and you will go to jail. Yep. I said, it's, you know, these are your friends. They're the same age as you, but you are perceived as a threat. You will be perceived as the ringleader to any illegality.
Yep.
You must exit. You can't say I'm going to be with them and then no, you leave.
And even worse, kids are so corruptible. So, mm-hmm. So it was Junior, right? Junior over there. He was the one that told you guys you guys want to do this. You guys are going to break windows. That was Junior's idea. And then he told you to go on.
Yeah. That's what he did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They will flip your little friends on you so fast.
They're
going to be shitting bricks in the back of that squad car.
Right.
So they're gonna rat you out and take their asses home.
It was him, right? It was him. He's the ringleader.
Yeah.
You know, you can go home if you say it was him.
Exactly. And the it was him story was written.
Mm-hmm.
Anything for you, Sweet?
I just think the public accountability like we have for the securities industry would go a long ways. If you could look up cop records the same way you could look up mine.
Yeah.
And have that easy, just as easy it is. Like if you know my name, you can look me up and look at everything and anybody else that's ever been licensed. Had the same for cops, and you could, and some, you know, I think in a joking way, I think you turn their body cams into Twitch streams.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Ohio.
And then you could generate fandoms. And then, you know, if their pay is actually as bad as they say it is, people can subscribe and people can have their favorite cop and people can.
Yeah.
You know,
like on the flip side of that, I feel like the body cam footage for this guy in Ohio, this officer in Ohio, actually helps him.
It actually helps him. I agree.
Because, you know, I'm on the side of truth no matter which way it goes. And when you look at this body cam footage, within he exits the car. He's what's going on. Here comes somebody at full sprint attacking someone with a knife. If that girl hadn't fallen, she'd have gotten stabbed. Then this girl puts her left foot in the ground, makes a right turn, and is going after the other girl, stabs at her once, and is preparing to stab at her again, all within the space of like 10 seconds.
No, I agree. It was a tragedy, but from what I saw, it was not an unreasonable use of force.
No, not at all. When is he going to have the time to pull his taser? He's already told her to get down multiple times. She's got a knife, which is a lethal weapon, and she's swinging it at somebody. When is he got? Because what I've read is before you deploy your taser, you have to say, "I'm going to tase you," and give that person an opportunity to comply. Guess what? She's actively stabbing.
There was no time.
When are you going to do that?
There was no time for
that. Oh, I'm going to give you three stabs and then I'm going to tase you. No. Yeah. I've got to save this lady who's holding the dog's life. And that's a reasonable assumption, is that if I allow her to keep stabbing this girl or stabbing at her, she could kill her.
You know, and that, Big Hoss, is where this whole issue is kind of like tap dancing on the snout of an alligator. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, there clearly are times when police abuse force.
Yes.
And there are times like this where it was justified, but they're equally, when you see them in real time, they're just as ugly.
Yes. And it's a tragedy, and I hate that this girl is gone. I know that it was a moment of rage for her, because you could tell by the way she came out that she was in a blind rage. And it's unfortunate that she's gone, but I cannot fault this officer for the actions that he took. And I'm actually now, ironically, on the other side of this argument with a lot of people that, you know, are normally we see the eye to eye on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? In this arena. But I'm on the side of truth, and I'm on the side of reason, and I'm on the side of what's right. And sometimes, guess what? I'm not going to say just because the victim was black that this could have been avoided. I don't know that it could have. And I can't blame him for the actions that he took.
And for the chief of police over there in that city, props to him. And I hope this is going to be the new trend. Because the thing back in the day was, it would take you months to get the body cam. It would take weeks and weeks and weeks before they would
which makes it suspect when you finally get it.
It makes it super suspect. And then
super suspect.
And sometimes things were edited, and then people were recording their own things. And then it would be contrary to what the body cam footage was, because it was all recorded. Right. And then there was like an info dump at the end of their shift, and they would edit things and change things. With the way that they're doing things now, with everything going right out, and then that was 2 days ago or yesterday?
Yesterday, the same day as the verdict, and he put that body cam footage out like that.
And he knew he had to.
That's important. And that's the protesting did something, because that is important.
Yes,
people want not to destroy their cities and loot all their shit. Now that's what happens when you have poor people and you don't treat them well in your community. They will take any opportunity they can to take all your shit. maybe take care of them.
The riot is the voice of the unheard. There you go. If you listen to the rioters when they were taking the peaceful methods of protest and trying to raise awareness and kneeling instead of waiting until they riot and then say, oh, this is not the way. There has to be a better way. All those ways were taken and you said, fuck you. So guess what? Fuck you back. That's what happens. I'm not saying I condone it. But I understand the mentality and the frustration and the hopelessness that people feel when this happens.
Well, when you build up your community and no one is really left behind and left out, you don't have these kinds of things happen. Mm-hmm. But if you just kind of just suck the money out of one sector and just leave them to their own devices, and then what's this? An opportunity for me to level the playing field? They're going to take it. And they're not going to feel bad about it. It's
so that they'll never have a representative that cares about them or...
Yeah.
Right.
So when you do that to areas, you cannot be surprised when those areas look out for themselves. Like,
or like Houston, where you had one drop box for votes for the entire city of Houston.
Yeah. That's a big ass box.
Yeah. That's ridiculous. And people act like, and then people act like they don't understand that what systemic racism is. No. Oh, that's not an example of systemic racism. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Or Georgia saying that you have to have people staffed at every box.
Yeah.
Stuff cannot be dropped in the box if somebody's not there to witness it. If somebody's there, they can like accost you and make you prove, you know, that and this. And somebody was like, well, who framed the argument at me is like, oh, there's 404,000 mail-in ballots where they can't account for like the chain of custody or whatever. And I go, no, that's not how this works. How this works is you show me evidence of somebody committing fraud.
There you go.
And then we go back and say, oh, this chain of custody was a problem. Well, now it opens up everything else.
Well, and until
you prove that chain of custody caused a problem, I don't care.
They're passing legislation as though a ballot is evidence of a crime just in the fact that it's a ballot.
Well,
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sweet.
According to certain people, it is a crime for a minority to vote.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I'd like to present Exhibit A. This is clearly the
melanin. This is melanin.
This is clearly the subject's ballot. And I'd like to call for my first witness. You don't need chain of custody.
This just gets back to burden of proof. It's all burden of proof. If you're going to claim fraud, show me the evidence.
Well, yeah, and guys, you know we've had total vote by mail in Washington State for years.
Oh, a lot of states.
You know, my daughter. You know, and here's an example. My daughter is developmentally disabled, but she's a bright girl and she's got opinions, and she likes to vote, but she has really fine motor problems.
Yeah.
And so, because you know, when she signed her voter ID, you know, and then she signed her ballot this last time, that the signatures didn't exactly match. Right. It got kicked back, and she had to. And I thought, that's great. That's right. An example of the system working.
Right.
Because, you know, I would rather have them be too careful than not. And we just don't have a problem here in Washington State.
And studies show that even for anybody, over time, your signature changes. That's just a fact. Over time, your signature changes. My signature isn't the same as when I was 21. You know?
Yeah, mine either.
And I you know something? I'll tell you this too.
There's when a I lot sign that's stuff, not the same as when I was 21.
Right. When I sign a receipt at Fridays, it's a totally different signature than when I sign for the paperwork for my mortgage. That's a really, you know.
Oh, for your mortgage?
I've got my
signature is different than your I've got a
feather freaking ink pen and but when I it's almost a straight line when I sign in at Chili's.
I do a smiley face. Whenever there's a digital signing thing, I always do a smiley face. And then sometimes it'll pop up on like the person's screen and like self-portrait. That's how you know it was me.
But Huck, you know this, when you sign your mortgage, your first signature is a lot different than your 35th.
Oh, yeah. We just signed this too. Another sheet for real.
Yeah, that's true.
They gave those packets now with the tab sticking out. With the freaking tab sticking out. I'm like, what the hell? Like, you right, know, because you got to go through all hands. That.
I got to switch.
Right. I'm writing like this. I'm just making an X.
Your first five signatures, you look
They're
great.
Beautiful.
Look
They're beautiful. But and then your hands that, like, you're like, your hands like this, and you're like, God bless it. But I'm like, oh, this one you got to put the date on, and this one you just signed, but this one you put the signature and the date, and you got to print your name. I'm like, Jesus Christ, can I just prick my thumb and just put blood on each one?
No, we're not taking your INR and your blood thinness.
Right.
says the guy who has to take rat poison every day.
Oh, damn.
Mm. And that was the other thing I was going to bring up. I think we've covered a lot of the cap thing. If you guys want to support this small business, by all means, go to patreon.com/digonamerica. Help us get to that $100 a month goal so that once we hit there, one third of that is going to go to a charity of the patrons.
I think we talked about John Ritter Foundation, didn't we?
Yeah, they're next up. John Ritter Foundation is getting the next little
change.
Our patrons right now are Tons of Mice. What up, Tons? You're over in the chat right now. Jenna Miyu, Chartan, Blake, Bill, the Hearthcast, and Paul. So thank you guys so much for your continued support of the show. You guys are better than Dutch.
That's a low bar.
You're just better than Dutch.
Was that a compliment?
I've been offended.
That's like telling a president he was better than Trump. Or she.
Yeah. That's like jumping over an ant.
Elephants can't jump. Did you know that? It is they don't have the bone structure to do it.
They don't have calves.
I never thought that elephants do not have calf muscles.
Think about it. They don't. They're perpetually flat-footed. How are they going to jump?
I can't slam on Dutch because he's the one that talked me into coming on this thing. So,
oh, well. Well, that's a mistake you won't make again.
Well, I mean, since his chair is empty, I mean, I don't see Big Hoss. I think we could just vote on this right now.
He tried to tell me that Eddie George actually deserved the Heisman over Tommy Frazier. So his opinion just,
well, that shows that Dutch don't know his ass from the hole in the ground. So.
A muddy hole.
I mean, Eddie George was great, but Tommy Frazier that year, come on. He was what we call that dude that year.
The Jimmys and the Joes, he was a Jimmy.
Man, oh man, he was good.
I think they're trying to communicate, Dave.
Now he looks like the guy who ate Tommy Frazier.
That happens. Especially the ones, the thinner guys, the skill position guys tend to gain weight. And then the big uglies down in the trenches just tend to lose weight because the doctors are really after them to lose weight.
Yeah.
Whereas when the skill position guys retire, there's not a really that urgency to tell them, hey, you know.
Well, that and they're used to eating 6,000 calories.
Oh, yeah. Because you, I mean, like I've told this story before. I would be on my way to football practice and I'd stop and get a Frisco burger combo from Hardee's with a vanilla milkshake. And I'd eat the whole thing while I was walking to the stadium for practice. Then on my way home, I would stop and get a Frisco burger combo with a vanilla shake.
And you and locked weight.
By the time I got home, to my apartment, guess what? Half that damn combo was gone. And then I would still eat dinner and then still eat after we got back from the club.
And you still lost weight.
And I still, hey.
I hate people like that.
Well, that's the thing is you can hate people like that, but you're going to hate what they do to actually keep that level of metabolism where it is.
Oh, man. In addition to football practice and, you know, practice and the training that we did, you know, the weight training and all of that stuff that and running that we did there, we would still go to the gym and play pickup basketball. And then I was going to the aerobics classes because there's a lot of fine chicks in the aerobics class. So I was in the aerobics class doing stuff with Crystal Hill was one of the teachers. Shout out to Crystal Hill from Eastern. I'm still friends with her on Facebook, but she was one of the first aerobics teachers I ever went to a class and was in there trying to do the butterfly and stuff that she was teaching.
That's old. Let me see your tussie roll. To the roll. No, y'all don't do it.
You're showing our age because I know that song.
Come on, man.
Them dudes still.
That was the joint.
Them dudes still getting checks. Still, they haven't worked a day since. That's why they didn't make no more songs after that. No need.
All they did was keep remixing it.
Nailed it in one.
David, it's like Quad City DJs. They made one song and quit.
They got a couple. They got like three.
Right.
But Dave, you're a biker.
I am.
An avid biker. You know,
well, and I got to say, this is the first time I've seen the humidor section. Big Hoss and I have so much in common, it's just scary.
They're going to branch off and do their own thing.
Right.
It's like us in football.
Now, what do you ride, Dave?
It's a Honda VTX 1300.
Okay, so you got a cruiser.
Right.
Now, do you have a cigar? Like, I have a crotch rocket right now, but I'm going to get a bagger. And when I get that bagger, my dream is that I will be riding along on 55 or wherever with my half helmet on, and I will be smoking. I'll have a backwoods Russian cream clenched between my teeth as I'm riding. What do you have? Do you smoke while you ride, or is it one of those things where you don't do that?
It's what, yeah, I generally don't, but you know, mm-hmm. And I got to say, I'm very jealous because my wife won't let me smoke in the house. So, you know, it's usually outdoors, but I just love to, you know, just kick back, you know, with a nice, you know, glass of whiskey in the yes. back porch and just enjoy. But no, I generally don't smoke when I ride because, you know, I end up getting ash in my face.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work out. So.
I could see that being problematic. You know, with not having doors, you know.
Yeah, that's why you got to have the nice windscreen. I don't know if the VTX has a windscreen.
Yeah, mine does.
Okay. Okay. Yep. Oh, yeah. I like my whiskeys, as you can see, you know, and I like my 19 crimes. Thank you, Mikey, for the recent addition.
You guys would like my grandfather's first motorbike. He had a 1938 flathead.
Really? Ooh, that was murder on his ass, though.
It was murder on a lot of things, too. And then he also, when he got drafted, he decided not to tell the draft officers that he could ride a motorcycle because he did not want to be a messenger boy because he knew who the snipers would go for. So what did he do? He ended up in a B-24 instead. And luckily, he was delayed enough in getting overseas that the 55% loss rate for bomber crews had passed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you go back into 1942, 43, like they'd send 250 B-17s and B-24s up over Germany. Uh-huh. 120 would come back.
Jesus.
And you think about it, this way. Every one of those that doesn't come back, that's 10 people.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the thing, and it's like, you know that it's a coin flip, whether you're coming back or not. Jesus Christ.
In a plane. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, he was in on some raids from Ploesti and things like that too, where the only place in Europe that had more anti-aircraft guns than Berlin was Ploesti, which was the oil fields in Romania. Mm. Wow. And they would have to come in at about 1,000 feet, which for anti-aircraft guns is point blank. They just roll it down to 85 degree and just fire shells. Mm-hmm. And they would knock you out at 1,000 feet, which means you're already at 1,000 feet. Guess what you can't do?
Parachute.
You can't bail.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's way too low for that.
Jesus.
So, jeez.
I just want to have a studio in my basement. You know, I'm not trying to fly no bomber jets. I'm not trying to ride no crazy bikes with no windscreen and ash all in my face. I just yearn for a simpler life.
I can't wait till all my computer parts show up and I get a new computer built.
Yeah, Dave.
Dave,
can you confess your sins to all of us right now? I know you're the person behind. I know you're the person who's buying every single graphics card on the planet right now.
You're the scalper.
It's him. I knew it. That's the secret reason why we brought you on today, is to confront you for your hoarding of graphics cards. Now, have you heard about this?
What are you talking about?
Okay, so I don't think we've ever really talked about it because, I mean, me and Sweet obviously know about it because we're nerds and we like building computers and stuff. But you guys are familiar with Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and all that stuff. Well, what people can do to earn that is, what do they call it, bit mining?
Yeah, it's mining, and they use their GPU when they're not using their computer to do the calculations that mine the coins. And so what people do now is you can actually go buy mining motherboards that will put like 10 graphics cards up on it. And this nice massive thing. But, you know, with that, you're probably making about $1,000 worth of coin a month. But the thing is to put 10 cards on there plus the CPU plus everything around it will cost you about 30 grand. So, when these latest graphics cards came out, the 30 series from NVIDIA and the 6000 series from AMD, that basically kicked up their ability to mine quicker and more efficiently. And so along with COVID logistical challenges, along with environmental challenges in Taiwan, where one of the chip manufacturers is actually running out of standing water to do its cooling plant, along with, you know, just basic general, the 30 series and the 6000 series were actual complete upgrades from the previous two generations. The 20 series and the 5000 series were only like 20-30% improvements over the 10 series and the 4000 series. Now this 30 series is actually a 200-250% increase over the 10 series. So you've got now you've got a whole bunch of people like, oh, I have a legitimate reason to upgrade now. You know, there's a reason to spend $500 on this. Well, if you go out to eBay and look at the card prices for an MSRP of a $750 card, they're selling for about $4,000 right now.
Wow.
Just outrageous.
That's crazy.
And here's the
that's if you can find one.
Right. So the thing is, Swede was building a new computer, and I said, "Cool, let me know what you get. I'm probably going to get exactly the same thing." He's got the little cart going, and he's doing this and that. No graphics cards. So I'm like, okay, so I can't go with Swede's plan. Ha, his plan was stupid. I, with my infinite wisdom, will buy a computer that's pre-built that has the card in it. Oh no, big boy. They're now buying all of those pre-built computers, taking the card out, and then selling it for $4,000.
Damn!
Yeah, so you can buy, like, you can buy, like, there's a couple ones right now that actually know who the scalpers are that don't do that. But the problem is they don't get cut. They're now marking up the cards that go into the computers enough so that it dissuades the scalpers from trying to buy them. So AKA to buy
Joe Consumer over here was just trying to buy a damn machine, man. I just want something.
Yeah. So Mike, like all the parts that I bought right now equate to about $1,700. And that's a pretty powerful machine. And you add in, say, another, you know, average $700 for a decent video card, you know, you're sitting at $2,400, which is a really good machine.
Right.
That, you know, as long as you know how to put it together yourself, which isn't very hard. I mean, it's just following instructions, basically. It's not that bad. Right now, to put my computer together with a decent graphics card costs $4,500 for somebody else to do it. So
Dave, why did you do this?
Outrageous.
The devil made me do it.
Didn't you hear this man said he had a daughter? You know how expensive daughters are? Well, qualified. Oh, Mikey doesn't know.
Qualified immunity. Is that what it
is? My son asked me, why did you have kids? And I said, well, you know, when two people love each other and they hate their free time and disposable income.
Right. You know, I mean, like I've said this before. One day it was my son Camden, who's my oldest son, my youngest son Rocco, and I think it was Luciana. No, it wasn't. It was just Cam and Rock. And we come out of this store. And there's this beautiful, beautiful black on black, totally blacked out Jeep Grand Cherokee SRT sitting outside. And we're walking past, and my Camden's like, ooh, that's a nice car. And I said, Cam, what you're looking at is the car I would have if I didn't have you, little motherfucker. That is what I would be driving if it wasn't for you.
Stop eating.
You see how much I love you. Now let's go get into the Honda Pilot. as we walk over to this Honda Pilot, take a look at what I wanted to be driving.
But instead, because
I've wanted one forever.
But instead, so here's the funny part about this chip shortage is Ford, General Motors, and I believe Nissan USA had to shut down their car production because they couldn't get the computer chips they needed for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this shortage, and the shortage isn't just the GPU market. It was the CPU market too, because when AMD came out with their Ryzen 5 5600 and their 7 5800 and the 5950, they couldn't keep them in stock.
Talking Matrix.
Yeah. I hear that's going to go on for a while.
The forecast right now is 2022 will be about when things start to loosen up. And a lot of it the miners are actually, punny, a minor problem in this. The major problem is actually the water shortage in Taiwan and the logistical challenges of getting parts to where they need to be. And then the supply, the company that's making them is building a new plant in Arizona, but that's not going to be online until 2022.
You talking about TSM?
Yeah. TSMC. Yeah. TSMC. It's four letters. That's what I remember.
Taiwan Semiconductors or something like that. Yeah.
TSM or something like that.
Talking about buying that stock.
But if you look at the reservoir that they draw water from, it's like, it's down to a trickle.
Wow.
And it right now is the monsoon rainy season. So they're hoping like that they just get massive amounts of rain. And so it's funny because I can actually get on here, look at the weather in Taiwan, and you can watch the eBay GPU prices fluctuate based on the weather in Taiwan.
Why?
All of this because Dave needs to make Bitcoin money.
I'm 5 years from retirement. You know, I got to stock it up, guys. You know, you can't blame me for that.
You're a cop talking about how far you are from retirement. I've seen this movie.
I haven't been a cop for years. My God, I don't even work in the schools anymore. I work for the state of Washington.
I was 3 days from retirement.
Getting too old for this shit.
Right.
I am.
And I meant to ask this earlier, what did you teach in high school? Spanish, you said?
I actually taught Spanish, yes.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. So did you learn in school from growing up? Like, what's your, not to sound disrespectful, but just like, I have a thing about accents and I love foreign languages. So I'm nerding out. I'm very interested.
I had a friend of – well, first of all, you know, I am, you know, puro gringo. I was born and raised here in Washington. But I just – and when I got into high school, you know, I knew I had – in order to get into college, I had to take a couple of years of foreign language. And I thought, right. Oh, my God, that just sounds so hard. So I put it off my freshman year, my sophomore year, and took it my junior year. And just found that I had this weird knack for it. And I just couldn't get enough of it. And wow. So just proceeded into college with that. I went to study in Mexico, met a ton of great friends down there. One of which is I'm still in contact with. And he one time just said, you know, told me, Dave, eres gringo de patria, mexicano de corazón. And, you know, in other words, and to me, that just meant so much. And it's been so much a part of my life, you know. And so I really feel that, you know, I have this connection, you know, to, you know, the Latino community and especially to Mexico, because that's where I lived and that's where I learned, you know, the majority of my life, you know, the language. But no, I was born and raised, you know, a white guy in a small rural town in Washington.
Well, to be fair, I had to put that qualifier on there. In my teens, I got a chance to go to Spain, and man, we got lost. Now a Dave looking dude came around the corner. I was like, a white guy, cool. Let me go ask this white guy if he knows how to. That was not a white man. That was a
Spaniard. He was white. He was just Spanish.
That was a Spaniard. He didn't speak not a lick of English, and I was like, damn it! Even the white people speak Spanish here.
Well, in Spain, you know, that's they're very European, you know, and a lot of them are.
Yeah. What's up, Bob?
I gotta up my grade on this cigar.
Oh.
I changed what I was drinking.
Oh, see?
I was wondering what you were pouring out of that that mason jar there.
Oh, that
you see, right I was watching you. Yeah.
That old boy.
This is Old Smoky Tennessee Moonshine.
Ah.
This is the apple pie. And
that sounds good.
It made this cigar a whole lot fucking better.
So you're gonna
the sweetness and the spice on the cigar paired with the cinnamon and everything in the apple pie moonshine, it's a much better pairing. Much better pairing. Oh my God. I literally took a sip of this. And I went, okay.
It was like American,
you were just smoking. You were just
invented.
You were smoking me with the wrong drink, man.
You had it all backwards.
So this is now American. It's as American as an apple pastry made in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
This is a 4.55 if you got the right drink.
Oh, sweet deal. See, got out of 4.32. Mm-hmm. It's a very obscure and precise number.
And I'm impressed that you remember that.
I have a weird brain.
Oh, man, the spice, the sweet spice that comes off this cigar now is, oh, man, it's very surprising. I was actually muting some of the nuances and essences of the cigar with the previous drink, and it was still good. But now, as long as I can keep it lit, I definitely get some more of these.
There you go.
Because I know what to drink it with now.
Sweet what to smoke it with.
Who'd have thought Boricuas and moonshine went so well together?
It does.
There's strength in diversity, guys.
Yes. Actually, I'll be in Puerto Rico in September.
And what's weird is this, is that, I mean, Mikey knows this. I smoke cigars with all types of different pairings.
That is true.
I'll drink like Orange Crush. I'll drink water. I'll drink whiskey. I'll drink bourbon. I'll drink rum. I was doing shots of mezcal last week.
Oh, that was a great.
I was a little tipsy last week after this podcast. I did about seven shots of mezcal last week. I was like, woo, my lips are getting numb.
Yeah, who'd have thunk that would have been, that would have taken you at seven shots of mezcal. Who would have thought that would have taken you over the edge? And that was after I'd been going for a minute.
What other topics did you have written down? Because I got something I want to talk about.
No, hit it. We got what you're going to bring up, and then we're going to wrap it up and head on home.
Okay, real quick.
Yes, sir.
Are you all football guys, like pro football?
Y'all are.
Okay. So it came out today that Justin Fields has epilepsy.
Hmm.
Now, we know that he is a potential top five pick in the NFL draft coming up in a few days. What do you think that does for him? Because
I think he should fall to the Steelers.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? But they said that he has epilepsy. There's a history of epilepsy in his family. Epilepsy, of course, is a neurological disorder that causes seizures. But as with most people, his epilepsy the episodes have decreased as he's gotten older. So he's had this condition his whole life, of course, and he's still gotten to this point where he's a potential top five pick in the NFL draft. Do you think that he's going to fall now because of this? Or do you think that it won't be a mitigating factor in his draft status?
I'll say this. So you remember Jerry Kill for Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a problem until it was.
Yeah, because coaching, I think, is so stressful. I know that playing pro quarterback is stressful as well, but being the head coach, man.
Number one. Number two, I think the NFL needs to get off their ass about banned substances because marijuana derivative medicinal use
helps epilepsy. Yes.
Nearly cured quite a few epilepsy types in patients. Like, there's stories of this girl that had like 300 seizures a month. Yeah. And CBD, whatever it is, took it all the way down to like two.
Mm-hmm. That's not nothing.
So I think the NFL needs to get off their ass and figure out banned substances actually need to be.
Yeah, banned. This is true. This is true.
And you know, cocaine, I'm fine with you banning.
Mm-hmm.
This whole medicinal use of other things for legitimate purposes needs to.
Yeah. And many football players have talked about how they use marijuana
for
pain relief because the medicines that they are prescribed by the team doctors kill their aggression, you know, make them feel like zombies, et cetera, et cetera.
Or they're opioids and they get addicted.
Or they're opioids and they get Brett Favre. Yeah.
One or the other.
They get addicted to it. And they're taking 40 pills a day like Brett was taking. Oof. You know? And side note, Jerry Kill, before he was the coach at Minnesota, was the coach at Northern Illinois. And
the Huskies.
He was not the nicest guy. Let's just say that.
I'm not saying he's a great guy. I'm just saying he's a good example of how it wasn't a problem until it was.
Yeah.
Because he coached for years without an episode.
Yeah.
And then his final year, there was like three episodes on the sidelines where he was taken off.
And he was kind of, after he moved into the big leagues, being in the Big Ten and stuff, I think that pressure really ratcheted up to win and things like that. And I think that affected him. So
but it wasn't until his like fourth year.
Did he end up passing away? I can't remember if he passed away or not.
And I wish QG was here to like give us some medical info here. QG, if you're in the chat, give me the answer to this.
I want to see if he passed away or not.
For epilepsy, is it always physical contact, or is it just it can happen by itself?
No. It could just happen. Oh. It could just happen.
Yeah, it can just happen, but yeah, you know, it can be really, in many cases, it can be medically controlled. And as Sweet pointed out, you know, if they would just allow that to a certain extent, there are things mm-hmm. that they can do. But in terms of, you know, will it affect the, you know, the draft? I don't see how it can't, because I mean, when you draft, that's an investment of funds and time. And like you say, right. You know, you hope it won't be a problem. But there's always that possibility.
But he needs to go to a team that actually gives a shit about him. And
yes.
Make no mistake, the way franchises are run are very different. The way the Rooney family runs things is very different than the way the Packers runs things. Mm-hmm. And probably those are the two best teams for him.
Yeah.
Because they actually give a shit about their players. And I say this as somebody who wanted them to just cut Roethlisberger after he had his issues, but they actually stuck with him and got him to basically fly under the radar, not have any more issues. And he's a family. Oh, you're talking
about Mr. Hands Down His Pants?
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew some girls that went to some ladies that went to Miami of Ohio, and they said he was notorious for doing that.
Yeah. But he's turned his life around, apparently, at this point.
I hope so. And the thing is that's something that we as Americans, I think, have forgotten, speaking overall, yeah. is that people change. A tweet from 10 years ago is not the mindset of someone now. Mm-hmm. A tweet when you're 17 is not the same mindset as you have even when you're 21. And if you are the same person, even now, I'm going to be 49 in July. I'm not the same person I was a year ago or two years ago or even 6 months ago. I've changed.
Yeah.
So we have to we're getting away from that, the land of second chances and things like that. It's, you know, and that is where, you know, cancel culture kind of falls down, because giving people a chance to better themselves.
Well, that's the thing, though, because if people have had plenty of time to better themselves and people still go after an old tweet, then you just, as soon as they say, you said this, I did say that.
And that was 10 years ago. That was 5 years ago.
Exactly. But that's not what happens. As soon as mm-hmm. people get called out, they say, and here comes the cancel.
Yeah, culture, don't do that. Plus, don't
just try to cancel me. No, but that's the thing. If you say, because I know I've said some pretty hurtful and mean things to people in my past. I've done it. I was mad. So I said it. But if they said, you said this about me, I'm like, I shouldn't have done that. That's a mistake on my part.
I shouldn't have done that. It was a mistake. Exactly.
I apologize.
Don't try to double down or get defensive about it.
Yeah.
Own it. That's part of your development. That's part
of
who
you are now. Own it and say that you have grown and learned. You know, I'm not the same person today that I was.
That's a part of my life that I regret. That's a part of my life that I've grown from. I am not that person anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I am sorry for it, but that's part of who that is something. Those are things that made me who I am now. You know, if you don't go through those times, you know, you don't develop into the person that
we can point to. But the thing is that it's hard.
Robert Downey Jr.
But it's also hard for us to come up in the moment of who they are, because they're not in the news anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay,
it's true. I guess what it all boils down to, you know, for me in this whole thing is that, you know, if we don't believe that a person is capable of changing their mind and changing their attitudes and the way they behave, then what is the point of protest? Right. What is the point of trying to change people?
Right.
You know, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah. You know? And that's the thing. It's like, you know, a woman that I had to ask from the pantheon of sister wives, Gina Carano from The Mandalorian. You know, it's not like her tweets were old. These were recent tweets that she put out there. And when called out on it, what did she do? She doubled down. She refused to be apologetic. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because when it first came out, I'm like, okay, let's see how she responds. And then when she responded, I had to go to my wife and say, you know, I had to ask somebody from the click, baby. She's like, Who? I'm like, Gina Carano is out of there. The girl from The Mandalorian? Yep. Out of there.
And that's the thing. Like, this assumed right to this, like these First Amendment absolutists, you know, these free speech, free speech absolutists. I think the only reason they feel that way is because they don't really want to apologize for stuff that they've said. And they also kind of like some really controversial and nasty shit. So this is a very good smokescreen for those kinds of things. Because people who are generally just like, yeah, I was drunk and stupid and I said something mean. Or I tweeted a bunch of random shit and it didn't make any sense. Because like if you
used to be a shitty person.
Yeah. I used to be a fucking asshole. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear somebody say that sometime because it would be refreshing.
Yeah. Because it's the truth.
Yeah. It's the truth. A lot of us used to be assholes. I'm sure there's people right now that will be like, man, Hassan was an asshole or he was obnoxious. I could still be obnoxious or he was this or that. And for sure.
Hey, we're Deuterostomes. Stones. At one point in our lives, we were nothing but an asshole.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But people have to understand also that freedom of speech is not freedom from consequences.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that that's where it gets lost. I can say what I want. Sure.
Say
what you want, but you might get punched in the mouth or you might lose your job. You know?
I don't get the libertarians crying about this. I'm like, this is the free market at work. Mm-hmm. People just don't want to hear your bullshit.
Yeah, they're going to call you out now instead of just saying, oh, that's just so-and-so being so-and-so. You know, Ellen DeGeneres had to go through it. Yeah, for being a butt munch to her staff and stuff.
Yep.
If I know that.
I think the only people that get passes now are the people that are 95 and are having a little trouble. And that's about it.
Right.
Yeah, they'd be off the
chair. Like I
remember my grandfather in his last couple of years. He was thinking it was still 1940.
Mm-hmm. Like I was watching Bill Maher last week with my wife, and he was talking to Sharon Osbourne. And at one point, he's like, because you know she had that whole thing where she defended Piers Morgan's right to say what he said about Meghan Markle, which is fine.
Which is,
you know,
yeah,
he has the right to say what he said, but then there are the repercussions of what he said, you know. And Bill said, you know, that because they were talking about her having to or Bill or whatever having to educate themselves. Oh, they were talking about that guy from that used to be on the Heat that tweeted that said that that anti-Semitic stuff during a live stream. And now he is meeting with rabbis and doing this other stuff, you know, educating himself. And Bill took offense to that, said, oh, that's bullshit that he has to go and educate himself. I'm 65 years old. I know who I am. I don't need education. And Sharon, you're well traveled. And what do you need to learn about race? Because you got a bunch of stamps on your passport doesn't mean you're aware of race, of issues of race. And I really took offense to that. And I lost, and Bill has said, you know, he says stuff I like, and then he says stuff like that, like intimating that because I'm 65 and I know who I am, I don't need to be educated on certain things. Everybody has blind spots.
But that's
I have blind spots.
Yes.
But that's Bill Maher to a T. He is smug with a slick back. Like that's just what he's the personification of the actual word smug.
And with the Gordon Gekko
corporate Democrat.
Yeah, and he has this arrogance about him, which has served him very well as being like the shock jock kind of comedian type. But when it comes down to like having actual like philosophical conversations about things, it doesn't work for him, and he can't just shock everyone into being right. Like he can't just win the argument by being the most offensive. Like, yeah, that works in comedy when you're making dick jokes. Yeah, great job, buddy. But when it comes to something that is a little bit deeper than comedy, I feel like he completely falls flat on his face.
He falls flat because, I mean, come on, dude. There are people that are very well-traveled, very well-educated, very well-spoken, very intelligent, that have blind spots on certain issues, issues of race, issues with the issues regarding the LGBT community. Issues regarding technology, You know, I'm 65. I don't need to be educated on anything. You had to learn Twitter. You had to learn social media. You had to learn the new media technology that came out to help your show. You learned that. So you do need to be educated on things.
Well, exactly. And the problem with Mar is that he's convinced himself that he does not have blind spots. Right. And you cannot move on and learn unless you at least admit to yourself, I have these.
Yeah.
Well, you know, once you say to yourself, you know, I have blind spots or things that I don't understand, right. At that point you can open up yourself to learning new things. Mar is not there.
And yeah. I say that to my clients all the time. We talk about this because I have clients who are phenomenal athletes, you know, and I tell them all the time, be aware that although you are a phenomenal athlete or you have these great talents, do not fall into the trap of thinking that you cannot be taught how to do something better or how to improve in a certain way. Because once you feel like you're the end all be all and you have no weaknesses, that is when you get surpassed by someone. You know, I'm sorry, Mikey.
Oh, I forgot.
Oh, damn.
It was something about Bill Maher. Babe, what was the last thing you said?
Oh, damn, Rudy.
You know.
It's hard to admit you have a blind spot when you're making a couple mil a year.
Oh, the blind spot thing. That's exactly what it was. Thank you, sweet. The thing is, he has made a living by staunchly asserting that he has no blind spots. And his audience has now, they eat it up and they love it. And like, look, he has no blind spots. He told me so. When he clearly does. But yes. That's the shtick now. And now the loop is complete. The cycle is complete. And he doesn't get that. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen him bring somebody onto the show, them correct him on something that he's got wrong. And then he uses that going forward in his next conversation. You know what
I'm saying? He's very Dutchian sometimes.
he doesn't take that information and then apply it to, he doesn't add that to his wheelhouse on his tool belt going forward. He just has the argument, he loses, and then he gets that segment over.
He says something like, oh, well, agree to disagree. Or he'll say, oh, okay, it's time to move into new rules or something like that. Yeah,
isn't it frightening, you know, how similar, you know, if you look at Bill Maher and his kind of self-proclaimed perfection and the fact that the people that, you know, in his audience that agree with that, and take a look at what Trump did.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
And the people that followed him, you know, the similarities are just freaky.
And because a lot of Trump's staunch followers, they refuse to accept new information. Correct. You can give them the truth. You can give them the statistics. You can give them the studies. And they find a way to either move the goalposts, pivot completely, or just try to discredit the source. Oh, that's so-and-so. That, you know, is all sides media really all sides? They're a liberal group. Or, you know, factcheck.org is a liberal group.
you're causing me a headache. So I was having a discussion with an old high school classmate who owns a business, and she does very well for herself on closed captioning. And I'm like, here's a study, here's another study, here's another study, because we're talking about minimum wage. And I'm like, there's like multi-year studies that show that raising the minimum wage
increases,
if done right, does not affect inflation, and it reduces racial inequality between wages.
Right.
There's two things that it does unequivocally. Like, I can show you, and I gave them to her, and she's like, "Yeah, but I'm gonna have to raise my prices if I have to pay people more and this, that, and the other thing." I'm like, well, then you're not paying them enough to begin with.
Exactly.
You took offense to that.
Exactly.
And it's like, look, I don't, that's fine, but your charging other people's isn't in the cost of living for the calculation of inflation. So I don't, what you charge Vitek for, you know, doing your little side of the business, the CPI doesn't take that into account.
Right.
We're talking about the cost of milk. We're talking about the cost of washers and dryers. We're talking about the cost of
all the things. And that's funny because I saw a meme the other day that said, if you're complaining that you can't find employees for your company because they say they make more on unemployment, That's just is a roundabout way of admitting that you're paying starvation wages.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, you're proving the point by complaining that you can't find people because they make more on unemployment.
Yeah.
It's not lucrative. It's not lucrative for them at that point to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Because I know that there's been times I was unemployed and, you know, you get offered a position and you calculate in daycare, gas to get to the place and come back and other things, other incidental expenses. And you're like, okay, I'm making about $50 a week if I take this job, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a job and everybody wants to work, you know, or earn a living. You want to earn your way. You want to pay your way. But when you calculate it out and you're like, okay, well, after all of the expenses of getting to the job and et cetera, are calculated into the wage that they want to pay me, I'm making $50 a week. Is that really helpful? Because now I have to take that away from,
right.
you know, rent at the time, food, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, it's you have to recognize that, you know, people that are making $15 an hour aren't putting it into their house in the Hamptons or their Bentley or their boat. They're putting it right back into the economy, mm-hmm. you know, whereas the elites, they get that money, they offshore it, they put it into their home and this and that. And then people
generally
will say,
the line is about $75,000 to $80,000 for a household for mm-hmm. money to start going into savings or investments rather than back into
the economy.
What we call the velocity of money back into the economy. And that also ironically is also the level at which happiness, the gain in happiness per dollar you make more starts to plateau off. Like you don't get very much, you don't get a lot happier per dollar. You don't get as happier per dollar as you do say from 35 to 36,000 a year as you do from 80 to 81.
Wow.
That's fascinating.
That's interesting.
I
had not heard that.
Because once you get to a point where you're comfortable, you actually start thinking about money completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four or five stages of life when it comes to money. There's the beginning stage where money is absent from your life and it's an enemy to you. You look at money as something to fight against.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is you start making enough to actually like afford a place to live and eat, but you're still struggling. And so it's money becomes not the struggle, but the amount that you have for personal time becomes the struggle. Mm-hmm. You start sacrificing your health because you stay up late at night because you're like, you know what? This is the only time I have control over myself.
Right.
So I'm going to stay up till 1 o'clock in the morning and read a book because I want to, or play a computer game or whatever, because I work 12 hours a day.
Right.
But this is the only time I can control.
Right.
But money is still that overarching, money controls you at this point. Then the third is when you start to get up to about $71,000 a year to 80, where all of a sudden you're comfortable
mm-hmm.
and you only have to work one job, 40 hours. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, I can actually go to bed at 10 o'clock now because I had a couple hours at night to do whatever I needed to do or what wanted, more importantly, wanted to do.
Right.
Then you have your 70,000 to say 1 million a year people where all money is where you just spend money to spend money. Type of thing, and you're not really saving, or you're buying things on payments, and money becomes an annuity to you. So you think it's coming in, and then it as soon as it comes in, it goes out, and then you get to the super wealthy people where money is just it doesn't exist. It's just a number they write on certain things, to pay for other things.
Yeah, they don't even think about it.
Because I tell the story, Nick Schorsch, who's probably the wealthiest person I've ever met besides Warren Buffett, told me the story about how his daughter told him she wanted to learn how to ride horses. So they lived in Philly at the time. So they went down and bought the horse farm.
Wow.
Not a horse.
Right. And who knows how long she's going to have this interest.
Yeah.
You know, and then probably sold the farm at a profit when she decided she was done with that.
Apparently she turned into quite the equestrian. And
really? That's great. That's great then, because yeah.
Must be nice.
It must be. MVP.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, that's something that you, me, and 99.999% of the population will never occur to us to do.
No.
Because we can't do it.
Yeah.
No.
It's
the most we could possibly hope is to say, okay, we could let's figure out how to get you lessons.
Yeah, lessons.
Or if you're at a modicum of success, okay, let's get you a horse.
Now hold on, y'all are forgetting
a broken down horse, but a horse.
You're forgetting about the most powerful effect on the economy, your imagination. All right, honey, go get the computer chair. I got some brown blanket here. I'm gonna go get your sister's weave.
Gonna push you around.
Yeah, we're just gonna pull you through the garage, through the driveway.
But if
every once in a while, my wife is gonna go, yay!
and to arm you guys with other things. So the big thing that people will say is like, there's only so many workers that are at the minimum wage. Well, that doesn't like in Nebraska, the minimum wage is the federal, which is what, $7.65 or whatever, $7.25, whatever it is. Well, that doesn't count all the people in Nebraska that make $8 an hour, $9 an hour, $10 an hour, you know, all the way up to $15 an hour. And how many people is that actually going to affect between those two things?
Right.
Omaha's kind of odd in that respect, because we actually have to pay people $15 an hour to even employ them because we have a labor shortage here. But it's that and then when you give people that amount of money, let's say you have two people married making $15 an hour, that's $60,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And now let's say they were making $40,000 or $45,000 a year. That $15 a year, A, they're going to be paying more tax because now they're running out of deductions. B, yeah. They're spending that money.
Yes.
They're spending the money. So the economy grows. And so you have all these positive effects all across the board,
right.
And I don't get why people don't think – what people think of is, oh, you're just forcing a business owner to do X. Well, you're not – you have to force them anyway.
Right.
I mean, what you're telling me is, oh, you feel like we – you know, you don't want to force a person, but you'll let them pay them $2 an hour and starve to death.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a current society where you have to pay people so they can live. And I think it's not an unreasonable thing to pay somebody a wage in which they only have to work 40 hours to make at least a comfortable living. And by comfortable, I mean, when you go home, you can have a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you can have a little bit of money to spend on and do things here and there. I mean, we want people to have more than just two jobs, collapse into bed,
yeah,
and wake up and who and
do
are
it all
they
over
at
again?
That point?
The rat race. That's the hamster wheel.
But even who are you as a person if that's all you're doing?
That becomes your identity.
You're a worker.
You know, that becomes your identity.
No, you're not even a worker anymore. You're just a cog in some giant
in a big old
machine.
Yeah.
And then I go back to Charlie Chaplin's speech. You're not machine men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and we in the United States, you know, we work our workforce to death, you know, more than it seems like most other, you know, first world countries do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I believe China and Japan have that problem of people just getting up from their cubicle and jumping out the window.
Yeah, they have suicide nets in China.
Yeah. Just because they work so much.
And we support it because we want our toys.
Right.
And it's the Apple plant, it's others. And I wish there was an easy answer to this, because we can't force China to change.
No. And here's the thing, you know, like most multi-layered problems, there are multi-layered solutions. And here in America, it seems like, you know, everybody looks for that magic pill, the one thing. What's the solution? There's not one solution. There's multiple solutions. And I get into those conversations when we talk about race, when we talk about, you know, inner city violence and things like that. What's the solution? And I'm like, well, do you really want to have that conversation? Because to kill the roots, right. that's a lot of different things. You know, people talk about, oh, you know, inner city violence. Well, inner city violence is a leaf that's attached to a branch, that's attached to a tree that goes down to the roots. And if you want to kill a problem, if you really want to not have that leaf pop back up again, you need to kill the tree. And how do you kill the tree? At the roots.
With fire.
And poverty.
And people don't want to talk about those systemic changes. They don't want to talk about economic divestment from, you know, impoverished areas. We were talking about bank deserts and food deserts.
We're going to get into reparations if we talk about this.
Oh, it's funny that every the U.S. even paid the Jewish people reparations and haven't paid. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's gotten reparations, but when we talk about Black people and descendants of slaves, and all of a sudden it's a big problem.
Well, I know you're at home stroking yourself and listening to us, Dutch. Let's do the next dig on history. Let's do reparations.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll have to stop back in. You're just going to be a busy lad.
You're not going to be like a resident DJ on this show.
But since we're going to start wrapping up here, let's start with Dave. Dave, let the people know again if you have anything on social media, how they can find you, get a hold of you if they have any questions or just want to support anything you're up to.
I tell you, you know, I don't do a whole lot on social media. I am just a regular guy out there. I spend a little time on Twitter. You can find me at ChapDog78, and that's I tend to blow most of my political stuff out that direction. And so, but I just wanted to let you guys know it has been a pleasure. You guys are awesome, and I've had a really good time.
That's because Dutch isn't here. Iris Swede, let the people know where to find you and what you're up to.
Find me at my lovely Twitter handle that's on the screen there. You can find me at Iris Swede on YouTube, where every once in a while I'll create a video that is about a topic I like, which the next one up is actually about reparations. So
yeah.
That'll be an interesting one. That won't be controversial at all.
I don't see how it could be. You meet a big house.
It's not Sweet Irish. It's Irish Sweet on YouTube.
Yep.
Okay.
Did you get the last little bit of subs so you could change the name, or are we still short?
No, I still don't have enough.
Yeah.
Come on. So you have to look for Husker FRK1.
Husker Freak. All right, bring us home, big fella.
Me?
Yeah, you the big fella.
Who you been talking to? I was just playing.
Oh man! I mean, after I saw the method in Red.
Oh my God! That was amazing. That was amazing. Hey, all right. So, like we were talking about Ohio today, and I was talking about how it seems that I am on the opposite side in debate with people that usually I see eye to eye with because, you know, of my views on that situation. And, you know, I think that as a people, all people, you have to be able to hold be able to hold multiple thoughts at once and multiple truths at once. And even on an issue such as police brutality, police abuse of power, police murder, it's still a case-by-case basis, y'all. And just because a victim is Black doesn't mean it was automatically a racially motivated incident. And you have to look at the context. You have to look at the situation. You have to look at everything that's involved. And one of the biggest detriments to the movement toward equality and social justice and combating systemic issues is the ability to be able to objectively look at something and look at a situation and look at an incident, even something as tragic as the death in Ohio, and say, that's not something we need to point to and say is an indicative of systemic issue. And I actually, because I publicly on social media have called out people for being blind to racial issues. And one of the responses I always get is, you're being swayed by certain activists and quote unquote left-wing media and things of that nature. And in reading some of the resources, when I was researching what went on and what happened in Ohio before and after I saw the video, I had to go on and publicly have a mea culpa and publicly say, guess what? You guys might be right in some instances, because I saw reports from certain media outlets and certain activists that I had respect for. And I still have respect for them because they say a lot of things that are true. But in this case, I did not agree with what I was reading, especially after I saw the video.
Right.
After I saw the video and I'm reading these articles or these editorials about what happened and why this was another incident of racial police abuse of black people and black women and da 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 da, I had to go on and say, you know what? And I tagged a few people that I've had debate with recently and said, you know what? You might be right in some instances. Not every instance, but you're right in some instances. And that is the part of growth of people. And you have to have accountability to yourself. And if you're publicly calling out people, you need to publicly be able to say, you know what? You might be right in some instances, because I was reading some stuff and I couldn't agree with it. I couldn't agree with it because I saw the video. I saw what happened.
Right.
You know, I saw the once again, thank you to the Ohio Police Department that put that out ASAP. You know, they didn't wait. They put it out within hours of the incident, and you were able to see exactly what happened. And I did not agree with some people that I truly agree with most of the time. And I didn't agree with a lot of people, friends of mine on social media, that were giving, you know, what about the taser and why did this happen and this shouldn't have happened. I can't agree with you. And we have to be able to look at situations for the context that they're in. We have to be mature enough individuals to say, yes, I am a staunch advocate of social reform and systemic reform, and I am anti-police brutality. I'm not anti-police. I'm anti-police abuse of power, anti-police
brutality,
anti-police violation of rights. I am anti the dichotomy in sentencing and things of that nature. I'm anti the systemic racism as a whole. But in this instance, I cannot say that this was that. And we have to be able to say that. We have to be able to look at things on that basis and based on the context. Because if we don't, we're hamstringing ourselves. We are making arguments that are counterproductive to the overall movement towards social justice, equality, and the dismantling of systemic racism in this country. So I implore you all out there, yes, I want you as an ally. Yes, I want you on the team of dismantling systemic issues that disenfranchise minorities, blacks, browns, indigenous people, Asians. I want you on our team. And those who are on our team, you have to understand that every incident is not indicative of that issue. You have to do it, and you have to be able to admit it, and you have to be able to call out when people do things and the outcome is tragic, and understand that it's not that. It's literally that is what was going to happen. You have to do that. You have to be mature individuals and state that and be able to hold multiple truths at once. Yes, there's systemic racism. But yes, sometimes people do things and the outcome is going to be that outcome regardless. Peace. One love.
Big on America.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Proof the deep state is real in America.
The media said what? Ha, ha, ha.
Patently false fake news.
Your organization's terrible.
This is the kind of thing that just tickles my balls.
Want to have a rousing discussion about truth, honor, patriotism?
The end of the Republic has never looked better.
They be fighting the power, talking about social issues, politics, you know what I'm saying?
Three punches.
I enjoy Big Hoss.
And I'm smoking my cigar, of course.
Am I allowed to talk?
No, not right now.
You crazy Dutch bastard!
Mikey, you're getting a bit upset here.
Mikey, you can edit.
My favorite podcast.
Kick names, take ass.
There's no going back. You've changed things. Forever.
Get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Big on America.
This is the gutter.
What is it, the 50th?
Every Friday.
The poodle skirts and the women have dinner on the table by 5 o'clock and their husband comes to the door and they give them martinis.
Be like,
go give me my slippers, woman.
You're right.
TheGutterPodcast.com.
Weed makes my nipples itch.
Is that what it is? My nipple fucking itches all the time.
Mine don't. I've been dude for years. I made fun of her for this.
My nipples don't itch when I smoke weed.
But neither do mine, dude. Fucking weird.
An irreverent take on today's world.
It's all bullshit.
Because the whole world is a gutter. TheGutterPodcast.com. Subscribe now.
What's up, everybody? This is Mr. Throwback Thursday from the Mr. Throwback Thursday podcast. Along with my co-host, Bill, every Thursday, we bring you classic hip-hop.
Classic.
Classic. You know, all the good stuff, the stuff that you forgot about, the golden age, pre-golden age, back to the original era.
For all the pioneers, I'm going way back, way back, way back.
Each week, we bring you hip-hop headlines, so we let you know what's going on with your favorite artists from back in the day. We bring you Wu News. We dedicate an entire segment just to the Wu-Tang Clan every week.
Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
We bring you two records. One is a one and done. One is a record of the week. We give you an artist of the month. We give you all the classics.
Classic. Straight classic.
Come and check us out. Every week we're on iTunes, Stitcher, and at MrThrowbackThursday.com. And if you remember nothing else, always remember, new school stale, old school fresh.
Hey, come back.
Big on America.